Agricultural suicide leads to national suicide. It's pretty basic. Agriculture is essential for life. And the Netherlands has been in the news much lately because their Prime Minister, Mark Rutte, is a New World Order, or what they call a World Economic Forum Young Global Leader, protege of none other than Klaus Schwab. And he is instituting the most radical crackdown on farms imaginable. And the result has been the most incredible farm protest we've ever seen. The Netherlands is literally, from one side to the other, vast amounts, the largest demonstrations I've ever seen of farmers and their tractors filling the highways, people protesting, absolutely outraged, because according to Prime Minister Rutte's plans, he wants to put more than half of all the farms out of business. He wants them to cull more than half of all the cattle. And what does he want to do with all that farmland? Well, he wants to build low-cost housing, high-density housing for migrants. The war on farmers and the orchestrated collapse on the global food supply chain is the real story behind it. The World Economic Forum, run by none other than Klaus Schwab, who has boasted that Vladimir Zelensky is his boy, and Justin Trudeau, and also the Prime Minister of New Zealand, Ardern, Jacinda Ardern, these are his protégés. And every one of them is undermining agriculture, undermining the global food supply, and leading to what he calls the Great Reset. Under the guise of the COVID-19 lockdowns, the masquerade madness, lockdown lunacy, governments initiated an engineered collapse of the global food supply chain to starve the public into compliance. Fear and pressure and restrictions and quarantines and effectively martial law in the name of fighting disaster, all of this was breaking down different aspects of the global food supply. Widespread famine and starvation are coming. And food will be used as a weapon to manufacture compliance to the Great Reset, or the Great Revolution. They want to call it the Great Reset. Diesel prices have skyrocketed, making farming even more difficult, while simultaneously making the food that does get delivered even more expensive to deliver. A fertilizer shortage is also not helping things either. While the mainstream media, the lamestream media, the disinformation, fake news, and the ruling class are hell-bent on our enslavement, and they continue to lie, to justify and to cover up what they do. And they blame it all on the conflicts in Ukraine, a conflict they initiated, they pushed for, and they are part of, and they are doing everything they can to drag out and aggravate. The fact is, the mainstream media is harmful to our health, especially our mental well-being, if we swallow their lies. We read recently that over 3,000 cattle just keeled over and died in southwest Kansas. And following over 100 fires that appear to be acts of sabotage against food facilities, that's processing and distribution facilities across the United States, 100 arson attacks almost simultaneously. This is big news, you'd think, but nothing to see it keep moving. Speculation is now running rampant about the thousands of cattle that appear to have died suddenly in Kansas. How is this possible? Well, the mainstream media, at the command of the ruling classes, have declared these deaths to be the result of heat, humidity, and lack of wind. I know what heat, humidity, and lack of wind is. I mean, we've experienced that quite frequently, especially up in the Nubian Mountains of Sudan, the Sahara Desert. But we didn't all keel over and die simultaneously. One farmer said, "I doubt it very seriously that so many cattle could drop dead all at the same time. In a heat-related incident, they wouldn't all drop dead at the same time. You would see a few dead at a time scattered across the earth, but not so many deaths at once. And all of it. With each passing day, the globalists are tearing down something else that is essential to keep an economy going. Now, like freedom. Pipelines, international trade, railways. And just take how Joe Biden instantly cut down the Keystone XL pipeline, abandoned because of his executive order. But there he is waiving sanctions on the Russian gas pipeline company, which is piping in gas into Europe. Baby formula manufacturing suddenly ceased on the ship. Shelves were just empty. Week after week, food price collapse intensifies. Food prices skyrocket and food supply collapses. The end result is abundantly obvious. I mean, you don't need to be a genius, you don't need to have a crystal ball, you don't need to be a prophet, see where it's going. No farmers, no food. Widespread food scarcity combined with sky-high prices that few will be able to afford, it's leading to famine. World Economic Forum supports are taking steps to guarantee a coming global food crisis. It has to be. And I mean, we know, we've seen it. I saw it in Rhodesia. Rhodesia was exporting food. But Mugabe managed to invade and take over the 5,000 commercial white farms, and before you knew it, they were starving. They needed thousands of tons of food aid brought in every month to keep them alive. And 95% unemployment in the country, inflation skyrocketed, more than half the population of Zimbabwe fled. You know, undermining the agricultural base of the country is catastrophic. Every measure that the Biden administration stretches have been making to control energy inflation is damaging the supply or inflating the price of natural gas, oil, and coal to the global economy. You just look how gas prices were, gasoline prices under just less than 2 years ago under Donald Trump, and where they are now. This is having a huge impact on fertilizer prices and food production. And that began all well before the war in Ukraine, so you can't blame it all on the war in Ukraine. Biden's people intervened to block the freight rail shipping of fertilizer at the most crucial time for spring planting, and effects will be disastrous. With the critical time for US spring planting at its critical phase, talking about April, May of this year, CF Industries of Deerfield, Illinois, the largest US supplier of nitrogen fertilizers, as well as a vital diesel engine additive, issued a press statement stating that on Friday the 8th of April, 2022, Union Pacific informed CF Industries, without any advance notice, it was mandating certain shippers to reduce the volume of private cars on its railroad effective immediately. Union Pacific is one of only four major rail companies that together carry some of 80% of all American agricultural rail freight. The CF company CEO, Tony Wall, said, the timing of this action by Union Pacific could not come at a worse time for farmers. Not only will fertilizer be delayed by these shipping restrictions, but additional fertilizer needs to complete spring applications may be unable to reach the farmers in time. Most have missed it.
Peter, is that the railway line that Warren Buffett owns?
I do not know the answer to that.
There was a story that Warren Buffett is a huge donor to the Democratic Party, and he's got this railroad through into Canada, and he brings his stuff on rail, and that's why he didn't want to use the pipeline. That's why they closed the pipeline down.
Well, just the piece of the puzzle there.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense. So by placing this arbitrary restriction on just a handful of shippers, Union Pacific is has jeopardized the farmers' harvest, increasing the cost of food for suppliers. CF Industries note there were only one of 30 companies subject to these severe measures, which is indefinite. I don't know how long this will be for. They ship by Union Pacific Rail Lines primarily from its Donaldsville complex in Louisiana and Fort Neal complex in Iowa to serve key farm states including Iowa, Illinois, Kansas, Nebraska, Texas, and California. These states feed not just the country but a large part of the world. The ban will affect nitrogen fertilizers as well as urea and ammonium nitrate, as well as diesel exhaust fluid and DEF, AdBlue. DEF is an emissions control product required for diesel trucks today. Without it, engines cannot run. It's made from urea. CF Industries is the largest producer of this, UAN and DEF in North America. Donaldsonville Complex is the largest single producer facility for the products in the whole of North America. Since the passage of the 2007, under Obama, U.S. Renewable Fuel Standards Act, which mandated annually rising targets for production of corn for ethanol fuel blends, biofuels have captured a huge part of the total corn acreage. More than 40% of the corn acreage in America is for burning in tanks. So this shift mandated by law to burn corn as fuel has added a major price inflation for food well before the COVID inflation crisis. So United States is by far the world's largest corn producer and corn exporter. Now to mandate a significant increase in corn ethanol for fuel at a time of astronomical fertilizer prices and fertilizer rail shipping being blocked reportedly by the White House orders, this will send corn prices through the roof. Washington knows this very well. This cannot be foolishness. This is deliberate. The price of U.S. corn has reached a 10-year high. Exports from Russia and Ukraine, major source, are now blocked by sanctions and war. So aside from energy insufficient use of American corn for biodiesel, the latest Biden ethanol initiative will add to the growing food price while doing nothing to lower U.S. gasoline prices. So what they're doing is taking more and more of what could be food, turning it into fuel, while refusing to use the fuel that they've got. A major use for U.S. corn feed now is animal feed for cattle, pigs, and poultry, as well as for human diets. This cynical biofuel order from Biden is not about American energy independence, which they have under Donald Trump. But Biden ended that in his first days in office by a series of bans on oil and gas drilling and pipelines as part of his zero carbon agenda, which is impossible. No more drilling, including offshore. No ability for the oil industry to drill, period. That's what Joe Biden mandated. In what is clearly becoming a U.S. administration war on food, the situation is being dramatically aggravated by the USDA, that's the United States Department of Agriculture. In this case, more like a banning of agriculture. They demanded chicken farmers to kill millions of chickens in 27 states, allegedly for signs of bird flu infection. Now, the H5N1 bird flu virus was exposed in 2015 as a complete hoax. But it was used to kill millions of poultry. The tests used by the American government inspectors to determine whether they've got bird flu are now about as reliable as the totally unreliable PCR tests, which were used for detecting COVID in humans, which was found to be 97% false positives. The test is absolutely worthless. In fact, the man who designed the PCR test said it was never designed for COVID and is completely worthless for that purpose. And that's why the vast amount of people didn't have symptoms, because they weren't sick. The U.S. government officials estimate that since the first cases were tested positive in February, at least 23 million chickens and turkeys have been culled, destroyed, not put into food supply, to allegedly contain the spread of a disease whose cause could probably just be the incredibly unsanitary cage confinement of mass industrial chickens. The upshot is sharp rises in prices of eggs, severe loss of chicken protein sources for consumers at a time when overall cost of living inflation is at a 40-year high, not since the worthless reign of Jimmy Carter. To make matters worse, California and Oregon are again declaring water emergency amid a multi-year drought. They're reducing sharply irrigation waters for farmers in California who produce the major share of American fresh vegetables and fruits. So you can see this is a perfect storm of cutting at every level agriculture. That drought has since spread to cover most agricultural land west of the Mississippi River, meaning most of America's farmlands. Now, American food security is under threat as never before since the 1930s Dust Bowl and the Biden administration Green Agenda, which basically buys batteries and everything else from China, who has the worst record when it comes to destruction of the environment and pollution, and polluting the oceans in particular. But he's doing everything to make the impact worse for the citizens. In recent comments, American President Biden remarked without elaborating that U.S. food shortages were going to be very real. And there's every indication from every side there is going to be a massive shortage of food. It has to be. With Russia and Ukraine either in war or being sanctioned, and with all the other undermining, this is getting bad. Biden's administration is deaf to the pleas of farm organizations to allow cultivation of some 4 million acres of farmland in America, which is perfectly good farmland, where they're not allowed to farm just because of some arbitrary environmental reasons. However, this is not the only part of the world where crisis in food is developing. You can imagine 4 million acres of prime farmland that you're just not allowed to farm for no reason except an arbitrary declaration from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Now, these deliberate Washington actions are taking place at a time of global series of food disasters, creating the worst food supply situation in decades, possibly since the end of the Second World War. in the European Union, which is significantly dependent on Russia, Belarus and Ukraine for feed, grains, fertilizers and energy, sanctions are making the COVID cult-induced food shortages dramatically worse. It's a huge amount of European nations dependent on Russian natural gas. This is going to be a very miserable winter. Remember, we coming out of our winter, they going into the winter in the Northern Hemisphere, and they're going to be seriously in trouble, because while we don't use internal heating, they need internal heating to survive in many parts of the Northern Hemisphere. The EU is using its green agenda as an excuse to limit state aid to farmers and to give farmers a hard time. In Germany, the new Green Party agricultural minister, Cem Özdemir, who wants to phase out traditional agriculture, allegedly for greenhouse gas emissions, has given farmers who want to grow more food a cold response. The EU faces many of the same disastrous threats to food security as the United States, and even more dependence on Russian energy, which are about to be suicidally sanctioned by the EU. Now, the interesting thing is that after 6 months of the war, Russia's ruble is stronger, the American dollar is weaker, Russia's doing very well economically, actually, Europe is not, and part of the reason is because the entire world outside of Europe and North America have ignored America's sanctions, and basically the entire Asian and global south is doing trade with Russia without any problem. They are not taking part in this. So instead of isolating Russia, what they've done is increased Russia's share of the market, and Russia's now uniting a whole lot of countries and finding an alternative to trading in the dollar. And this could cause serious backlash. Europe is actually hurting themselves more than they're hurting Russia by their energy dependence on Russia and by all the complications coming from the sanctions. The major food-producing countries in South America, especially Argentina and Paraguay, at the moment in the midst of a severe drought. Sanctions on Belarus and on Russian fertilizer are threatening Brazil's crops, aggravating with bottlenecks in ocean transport. There's many container ships and others that can't get into harbors because of the queues and the backlog and logistics. But Brazil is now closer to Russia economically than ever before. China's just announced that owing to the severe rains of 2021, this year's winter crop, their wheat crop, could be the worst in history. Shanghai, the world's largest container port, has been under a bizarre COVID-zero quarantine for much more than a month, with no end in sight, because there was no COVID. But meanwhile, there's a backlog of containers shipping things out and bringing food in. Africa is also severely impacted by American-imposed sanctions and war, ending the food and the fertilizer exports from Russia and Ukraine. Because 35 countries in Africa get their food from Russia and Ukraine. The red indicates food from Russia and the blue from Ukraine. You can just see up to almost 100% in total in the case of Somalia and almost 100% in the case of Benin. And Egypt, well, that's past the 80% and so on. So there's a huge amount of dependence on. Even South Africa is up there, close to 50% of our wheat is not coming from Russia or Ukraine, or should be, but it isn't at the moment because of the sanctions and the war. Here you can see how much of Ukraine is dedicated for wheat production, and most of those are in the war zones. And with the sanctions, this means a lot of places in Africa are not going to get the food aid wheat that they are normally expecting. In addition, 32 countries in Africa import fertilizer from Russia and Ukraine. Alternatives are seriously lacking, prices are soaring, supply is collapsing. Famine is predicted. Remember, no farmers, no food, no future. I mean, this is pretty basic, but of course the South African government doesn't seem to get that. They also have been waging a war against farmers. Think when Nelson Mandela became president of South Africa, we had 70,000 white commercial farmers who were feeding 100 million people, and our population was only 28 million. Now our population is more than double. We've got over 60 million population in South Africa. We've got about 26,000 commercial farmers, and they're still producing enough food for 40 million people, which is pretty impressive, but the population is 60 million. Therefore, now we have become a food importer. South Africa always used to export food. It's not just our country suffering. Think of all other countries all the way up to the Congo who are being fed by South Africa. which can't be right now. So there's been a war on farmers for a long time. There was a time when most countries in the world were food sufficient. Now most countries in the world are dependent on food exports. And the Dutch, believe it or not, are the second largest exporters of food on the planet, just after America. The Netherlanders are now being targeted. They're being targeted by the World Economic Forum, who's trying to put half of their farms out of business and kill more than half of all their cattle so that they can build low-cost, high-density housing on the farms for migrants. Now, how are you going to feed them all? The farmers, of course, are furious and outraged and protesting, and this is the biggest set of protests probably ever seen in Europe, certainly in the Netherlands. In Germany, farmer groups are also upset over a recent Renewable Energy Act passed by Parliament, and the Polish cultivators are protesting the cost of fertilizer, and Italy and Spanish farmers are facing increasing fuel costs, skyrocketing costs and prices. The Netherlands is the largest exporter of meat in Europe, second largest exporter of food overall after the United States of America. Even though it's a nation half the size of Indiana, it's a small country, but it's very intensive in its farming methods, and very advanced in its farming methods. And these are families who've been farmers for generations. Food exports generate more than $100 billion a year in revenue for the Netherlands. I mean, this is a major food producer. To want to destroy half of their farms is not only catastrophic for those farmers and the country, but what about the people who are being fed by the food they're exporting? Where's the food meant to come from now? Experts attribute the Netherlands' success to its farmers' embracing of technological innovation, and Netherlands really is some of the finest farmers in the world. According to the farming lobby group LTO Nederland, there are nearly 54,000 agricultural businesses in the Netherlands, many of them family farms, of course, with exports totaling 94.5 billion euros. Just in 2019. Dutch farmers say they are being unfairly targeted as polluters, while other industries like aviation, construction, transport, also contributing to emissions, face far less far-reaching results. As you can see, this is clean energy, this isn't polluting anything. But the Dutch farmers, they're the problems. Polish farmers took to the streets of Warsaw shouting, enough is enough, we won't let ourselves be robbed. We workers cannot pay for the crisis created by politicians. Well said. The Scottish farmer is reporting that supermarkets are running out of food and protests are continuing to intensify. And there are many parts of Europe where people are facing just empty shelves. And fishermen in Europe are blocking ports, and several ships are honking horns to express their discontent over inflation, which is stealing from their earnings and from their savings. Meanwhile, German farmers have blockaded roads at the border with the Netherlands and gathered in large numbers to protest near the city of Helenburg. Very simple message, no farmers, no food. That's why we need to smash cultural Marxism. We're facing an attempt at agricultural suicide, which always leads to national suicide. Well, we can learn from history too. This has been done before. But just take the national suicide as the cause. Proverbs 14 verse 12. States there is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. Within 12 months, the population of Khoisaland, what we now call Transkei, plummeted by 80%, mostly through starvation. This bizarre episode in history was initiated by the niece of a witch doctor. The cattle-killing national suicide of the Khoisan in 1856 in Transkei, now the Eastern Cape of South Africa, was one of history's strangest socio-economic disasters, well, before this year. Now it looks like we've got governments around the world determined to do something like this cattle killing. To think that the Netherlands is saying, you've got to kill half your cattle. I mean, can you imagine? Well, when this was done in the Transkei, it didn't end well. Through mass hysteria, the causer convinced themselves of the need to kill all their cattle, destroy all their food, and sow no crops for the future. It was economic suicide, and it led to mass starvation. In April 1856, two young Khoisa girls, 15-year-old Nonkawusu and 10-year-old Nombanda, were sent to chase the birds from the cornfields near the River Gaza. And this is the site of the prophecy that came to Nonkawusu. This is the pool where this 19th century prophetess saw visions that resulted in a great disaster for her people. The elder girl, Nongqawuse, reported that while they were drinking at the water's edge, two mysterious figures materialized alongside them. They told the girls to take a message back to the kraal that a great event was about to take place. All the people should kill their cattle, and these would no longer be needed. You're not going to need cattle anymore. Once that great day came, there'd be no shortages of any kind. They must tell the people there would be no sowing of any crops, no cultivation crops. All stored grain must be thrown away. Once this had been carried out, the strangers told the girls that no further work must be done. Now that's a nice message for some people. When all the cattle had been killed, the Russians would come, sweeping all the whites of the sea. You see, it was known at that time that the British were fighting the Russians in the Crimean War up north. So because it was up north, it was assumed the Russians were black people. The girls duly carried out this message back to their kraal, and at first everyone simply laughed and ridiculed them for their naivety. But the girls went back to the river the next day and received the same message. Nongqawuse was supported by Uncle Malakaza, who was also a witch doctor. 4 days later, when Malakaza went to the river with his niece, he could not see the figures the girl assured him were there, and he could not hear their words. He could hear, but he could not understand their words, and so Nongqawuse had to translate them for him. Nongqawuse claimed that they said, "We are the people who have come to order you to kill your cattle, to consume your corn, and not to cultivate anymore." Malakaza was instructed to take this message to the paramount chief of the Xhosa, Sarili, and to all the other chiefs. So Malakaza adopted the vision and the message of the new people as his life calling, and he advanced it fervently. Malakaza began by killing his own cattle. Soon his neighbors followed suit. There was a general excitement at the thought of new herds of cattle that would appear, and that the strange spirits had promised them would appear on a great day. Over 400,000 cattle were slaughtered in Transkei. Paramount Chief Sarili listened to Malakaza's words and was prepared to believe that Nongqawuse had really seen the strangers. This is a sketch of King Sarili of Xhosaland at that time. He was encouraged in this by his own hopes of seeing the British driven away from the borders of his lands and of seeing the influence of the white men removed from Xhosa life and society. Sarili particularly objected to European clothes, saying that his naked people, clothed in red clay, were clean compared to the whites who wore clothes, because clothes contaminate. During 1855, before Nongqawuse's vision, news had reached the cause of the Crimean War, and the cause of hope that the British would be beaten and the Russians would come and force the whites to leave their farms so that they could be looted and the herds of cattle could be expropriated, doubtless without compensation. The idea soon took root that Nongqawuse's strange spirits had been Russian black men. The Russians believed the Russians were actually ghosts of Xhosa warriors who had died and therefore must be black. The Xhosa expected the Russians to come to liberate them, but they were assured that none of this could happen until all their cattle had been slaughtered and all their grain stores destroyed. So by the summer of 1856, the sayings of Malakaza were heard throughout the land and thousands of cattle were dying at the hands of their own owners. British officials were aghast at the development but felt helpless to stop them. Missionary Charles Brownlee, brought up amongst the Xhosa, who was also fluent in speaking their language, was prominent in visiting the kraals of the Xhosa to try to counteract Malakaza's influence, but most would not listen to his warnings. With Sarili supporting Malakaza's message, the Xhosa people became divided between the believers and the unbelievers, with a large majority believing the vision and following the paramount chief. In Jeremiah 23 we read, "Thus says the Lord of hosts, do not listen to the words of the prophets who prophesy to you. They make you worthless. They speak a vision of their own heart, not from the mouth of the Lord. They continually say to those who despise me, 'The Lord has said, you shall have peace.' And to everyone who walks according to the dictates of his own heart, they say, 'No evil shall come upon you.' For who has stood in the counsel of the Lord? Who has perceived and heard his word? Who has marked his word and heard it?" All that in Jeremiah 23. The British representative at Port Elizabeth, John McLean, failed to fully comprehend the dreadful significance of what the Xhosa were doing, but sensed a plot to provoke war against the British authority in South Africa. This is a picture of Lieutenant Colonel John McLean. The British High Commissioner, Sir George Grey, often Grey's son's name, was alerted about this disastrous development, and he is the governor of the Cape, to prove to the unbelievers that Malagasy was telling the truth. So really now went with the prophet to the Zara riverbank, where the strangers had first appeared to Nongawusi. There he has apparently shown one of the sons, who had recently died, and his long dead favourite horse, as well as acorn and beer that miraculously appeared as presents from the new people. Chief Sirili was impressed. When Malagasy told him that all the cattle and goats must immediately die, Sirili readily agreed. Malagasy warned everyone present the Russians would not come, nor would any of the other predictions come to pass until Khoza had killed all their cattle and destroyed all their grain. He then named places within Transkei where Russians would appear and where the dead would return to life. Sirili returned to Sklom and began to kill all his cattle. As he did so, all the other believers followed suit. Soon, Khoza from throughout Transkei were hurrying towards the River Zara in the hope of witnessing a miracle. With a mass hysteria mounting and the frenzied cattle killing escalating, Malagasy announced the date for the fulfillment of everyone's eager expectations. At the end of 1856, Malagasy declared the resurrection would occur at the time of the next full moon. Excitement reached fever pitch as the day of the full moon approached. But in spite of the fact that hundreds of thousands of Khoza people were earnestly anticipating it, nothing out of the ordinary occurred. No Russians appeared, nor did any cattle rise from the ground. Chief Sirili now began to have doubts. Already the young children were going short of food, and soon the famine would be affecting everyone. He decided that Malagasy had better produce some of the new people in order to convince the children that the spectacular sacrifice was justified. Malagasy now was afraid, and he fled from his own kraal, fearing that Sirili might have him killed. He sent a message to the chief saying that the new people had moved to a stronghold to wait the day. The Russians were not impressed with the amount of cattle killed. All cattle in Transkei must die if the Russians were to come. Malagasy made a fresh prediction. The Russians and the new moon would appear on the 16th of August. And visitors to the riverbank now found that the frequent appearance of the new people was stage managed by Malagasy and his team of marshals. No one was allowed to get close enough to speak to the distant shapes or hear what they said. They seemed to speak only to Malagasy or through him. And sometimes the prophet pointed out to sea and told the pilgrims that there were the heads of Russians bobbing about in the water. Other times ghostly lowing was heard from unseen cattle or bleating from invisible ghosts. Frenzied hysteria now prevailed in Transkei. One day, at the beginning of August, an afternoon mist was seized upon as the beginning of the day of deliverance. Everyone fled to their homes, anticipating the deliverance. The day passed, the night fell, nothing happened. Every sound was interpreted as having a bearing on the coming of the new people. On the great day, Malagasy said, two suns would rise in the heavens and would collide, whereupon all the whites would be swept into the sea which would divide, revealing a road down which they would march to the place of creation known as Ulanga. There Satan would take his revenge on all the whites and on all the Khoza who had disobeyed their call to kill all the cattle. Then the world would be plunged into darkness until the new sun would rise and herald the new world. This apocalyptic vision drove the Khoza into an orgy of even more cattle killing. The resurrection of the Khoza dead would take place. Malagasy told the Khoza, there would be a thundering of every oxhide shield ever beaten. This would signify the approach of many herds of fine new cattle that had been promised. New corn would cover the land and every human ill would be put right. The lame would walk, the blind would see, the old would become young, the young would become younger. Nobody would have to work and everything would be new. Sounds like World Economic Forum, Great Reset, where Klaus Schwab said, in the future you will owe nothing and you will be happy. Absent on that day would be those who died by snake bite or drowned in the sea or the river. Their homes, the herds and the farms of the whites across the river would be theirs for the taking. This reminds us of what the scripture says, the land is full of adulterers, for because of the curse the land mourns, the pleasant places of the wilderness are dried up. Their course of life is evil, their might is not right. For both prophet and priest are profane, yes, in my house I have found their wickedness, says the Lord. Therefore their way shall be to them like slippery ways. In the darkness they shall be driven on, and fall on them, for I will bring disaster on them, the year of their punishment, says the Lord. And I've seen folly in the prophets of Samaria. They prophesied by Baal, and it caused my people Israel to err. Also, I've seen a horrible thing in the prophets of Jerusalem. They commit adultery and walk in lies. They also strengthen the hands of evildoers, so that no one turns back from his wickedness. All of them are like Sodom to me, and her inhabitants like Gomorrah. All of this also from Jeremiah 23. When the 16th of August passed without anything happening, Malachi pressed for a postponement of the great day. The new people would not appear until those cunning causer, who had sold the cattle to avoid killing them, carried out the decree completely. At one stage, a rumor was spread that the armies of well-armed strangers had emerged from the sea and were lining the shores, but they could only be seen by the righteous. And apparently there weren't too many righteous around to actually see them. Malachi's next order, they want to thatch their huts securely, as there would become a great storm and a tempest on the day of judgment. Cyril was becoming suspicious. He was under intense pressure from his counselors, who were aghast at this willingness to continue slaughtering the nation's cattle. So once more, he visited Malachi at the riverbank in order to speak to strangers. He was told to Malachi to look at the ground and under no circumstance look up. He would then see the shadows of the new people passing across the ground in front of him. Cyril accepted this deception, was duly convinced when the shadows passed by him. But reports of the meeting were so embroidered that as they spread, eventually it was claimed Cyril had seen boatloads of new people arrive at the mouth of the river, informing him they'd come to establish the freedom of the black people. Meanwhile, frustrated at his inability to understand the self-destructiveness of the cause, Sir George Grey, the governor of the Cape, threatened Cyril with dire consequences if he encourages people to kill any more of their food supply. Grey could see that starvation in the land of the cause would have catastrophic consequences for the Cape. So if Grey could not understand why the cause were blind to their own danger. As 1856 drew to a close, the skies of the Transcar were filled with vultures, circling, diving at the bovine and human carcasses lying in almost equal numbers in the uncultivated fields. Upwards of 400,000 cattle had already been slaughtered. In the subsequent famine, at least 100,000 cows died of starvation between the Fish and Kai rivers. Cyril, meanwhile, still showed a blind faith in the word of Malachi. Each time Cyril met him, Malachi had a new excuse to explain why nothing had happened at successive meetings. Cyril was so upset that he tried to kill himself. At one failure, his servants were forced to remove all knives and sharp instruments from near him. Malachi, reaching the end of everyone's patience, now spread the word that the new people had abandoned the cause in disgust because they had not killed all their cattle. But so desperate for the cause at this stage that more bizarre visions were seen. Causa claimed to have seen the Russian armies marching on the surface of the sea, people sailing in umbrellas, that heard thousands of cattle beneath their feet. On the 31st of January, 1857, a great assembly of more than 5,000 Causa met near the town of Butterworth. Believers from all over the land attended, and Cyril himself was present. There they received another message from Malachi that they must go home and kill the milk cows that had been spared so far to provide milk for the babies and young children. The cows were then to be skinned, their hides were used to be protecting the doors from the furious lightning that would precede the arrival of the new cattle. This time, Malachi had a few new touches. Once the new sun had risen the sky, the sea would dry up, the sky would descend to just above head height. On the 18th of February, 1857, the revised and delayed day was deemed to have finally arrived. An English settler, Robert Mullins, was with a group of causa when the great moment came. The sun rose, the sun set, as usual. Nothing happened. Mullins recorded the day's events in his diary with clinical accuracy. In between, nothing much happened, except a lot of waiting and desperate hoping on the part of the causa. But Mrs. Brownie, a more compassionate witness, noted, one of the saddest sights was that of an old woman, wizened with age and doubly wrinkled by starvation, decked out with brass rings jingling on her withered arms and legs. They had kept on their gold ornaments, hoping against hope till all week, till 2 weeks to remove them. As the sun set, there was a silence across the land as of death. No children laughed and played, no cattle lowed, no sheep bleated, No happy herdsman laughed and joked to his friends at the end of the day's work. As if seeing the light for the first time, Cirilli pointed at Nongawusi and said, "This is the reason we are broken today. It's on account of this girl." But she was not the only one to blame. Cirilli himself had succumbed to the fantasies of a charlatan, Malakaza, the dreamer, the schemer, who had wanted to be the messenger of the new people. So was Malakaza a madman, demon-possessed, or was he just an inadequate human being, unable to cope with life and reality? Perhaps he even believed his own stories. The tragedy is, so too did the vast majority of causes who had destroyed their nation. Jeremiah 23 says, "The prophet who has a dream, let him tell the dream. Hears my word, let him speak my word faithfully. What is the chaff compared to the wheat?" says the Lord. "Is not my word like a fire?" says the Lord, "like a hammer that breaks the rocks in pieces. Behold, a whirlwind of the Lord has gone forth in fury, a violent whirlwind. It will fall violently on the head of the wicked. The anger of the Lord will not turn back until he has executed and performed the thoughts of his heart. In the latter days, you will understand it perfectly. I have not sent these prophets, yet they ran. I have not spoken to them, yet they prophesied. But if they had stood my counsel and had caused my people to hear my words, then they would have turned them from the evil way, from the evil of their doings. Am I God near at hand, says the Lord, and not a God far off? Can anyone hide himself in secret places so I shall not see him, says the Lord? Do I not fill heaven and earth, says the Lord? I have heard what the prophets have said who prophesy lies in my name, saying, I've dreamed, I've dreamed. How long will this be in the hearts of the prophets who prophesy lies? Indeed, they are prophets of the deceit of their own heart." All that from Jeremiah 23. The British officials who toured Transkei trying to distribute food found heartbreaking sights. In some places, people had climbed into their grain pits to see if the grain had been miraculously filled in the absence. But 2 weeks to climb out again, they died in the grain pits. Emaciated women with children clinging to flattened breasts raked the hard ground for roots. Starvation drove others to boil and eat their oxide shields or their leather skirts. Those who had reached the soup kitchens provided by the British were no more than walking skeletons. Many died of exhaustion a few short distance from safety. A missionary wrote, "Famine has effaced all human likeness. Young men of 20 lost their voices and chirped like birds. Children were wrinkled and withered and grey. Men and women presented the appearance of baboons, like baboons searched under rocks for insects to devour. As the vultures and wild dogs devoured the dead and a half-dead person, survivors turned to cannibalism in their last desperate urge to live, killing and eating their own children. Malakaza himself died of starvation." And this is the site of Nongawusi's grave. Grave of Nongawusi, the cause of prophetess, who lived in this vicinity of the cattle killing of 1850, should say 1856, should say 1856. And she died in 1898. And there's even a memorial to her for some reason. And a memorial to the men, women and children who died in 1856 to 1857, catastrophic cattle killing. And this is located in Buffalo City, next to King Williamstown in Eastern Cape. Proverbs 28 verse 19 says, "He who tills his land will have plenty of food, but he who follows frivolity will have poverty enough." And so at this time, as our Dutch brethren are protesting against the New World Order, World Economic Forum, insanity of cattle killing, being told to kill half of all the cattle in the Netherlands, and close down half of the farms in the Netherlands, and stop cultivating half of the farms in the Netherlands, they should remember the cause of national suicide of 1856-1857. This is insanity. What on earth do they think will come of closing down farms? Why are the Americans preventing 4 million acres of farmland not to be farmed at a time when people are literally starving? Any questions and comments on the Netherlands protests and the Transkei cattle killing, national suicide? Yes?
When they had to kill the cattle, why did they not continue counting grain at least?
But that was what they were commanded to do by the witch doctor who had heard from the new people, the Russians, a apparently, who had told him to do this. And that's the thing, they were listening to a false prophet. And he was explicit. All the cattle must be killed. All the grain in your grain stores must be thrown out. You must not cultivate, you must not sow, nobody must do any work. It sounds like the expropriation of compensation, EFF, or everything for free party. And unfortunately people do this all over the world. This is what communists have done all along, and as Margaret Thatcher said, the problem about socialism is, sooner or later, you run out of other people's money. And this is following fantasies. And the World Economic Forum, I don't know how many of them believe in their agenda, that this is going to improve things, or how many are just cynically getting people to, in the name of climate change and so on, commit economic suicide, agricultural suicide, so that it'll bring the world's population down. Remember the Georgia Guidestones? Georgia Guidestones say you've got to keep the world's population under 500 million. That means there's 8 billion surplus people out there. And wars help in bringing the world's population down. Abortions help, euthanasia, sterilization, LGBTQ, gay agenda, yes, that all helps. But there's nothing like famine to get rid of hundreds of millions of people fast. So, is the World Economic Forum encouraging, orchestrating a global famine? It looks like it.
Guy called Steve Cortez, who's a prominent economist in the US, and he was saying that there are now 20 million households in danger of now losing their homes because of inflation. They mortgage, they've got credit card debt, they've got everything going. And of course, huge investment houses like BlackRock are there poised to buy up these homes at dirt cheap rates. And that's why our past class says you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. And this is by 2030. This is, that's part of it. So this is not such a multi-pronged attack on the peoples of this world. Klaus Schwab himself wants the population reduced to 1 billion because he's much more humanitarian than the other guys. But anyhow, another thing about the fuel I could mention is that the amount of fuel that is produced by wind and, sort of green energy, if you like to call it that, is in the United States is 4%. Now, if you make war against gas and I won't call them fossil fuel, that's now becoming a debate as well, that this stuff comes from fossils. But that's 96% of your energy you're making a war against. And what can the outcome be other than a complete disaster?
I mean, we know in our personal life, you can't not work and expect good things to come out unless you work for the government. You can't destroy your savings, destroy your food supplies and expect good things to come out of it. And just for a good business to work, if you just think of the world's economy being like your body, if one organ in our body stops working, you're in trouble. You need every organ in your body to work well. You can't just manage, and in fact, if you lose a limb, it complicates your life. If you lose an organ, it can majorly complicate your life. If something has a blockage, we can have a stroke or heart attack if you have blockages in the supply of oxygen or blood. So, on all of these things, think of the world's economy like that. You can't shut this down, close that down, overregulate this, strangle that, and expect things to work well. An economy needs everything to work well to be healthy. And they are undermining every single basis, which starts with the fear of God and the law of God and strong families and intact marriages. But they wage war against every single thing that lays the moral foundation and economic foundations and social interactions. And then you have the COVID lockdown. Churches closed, clubs closed, voluntary associations closed, movement restricted. You can't breathe fresh oxygen, got to keep breathing your own carbon dioxide. This is just insanity. Are these people stupid or are they evil? I mean, is this just because if they were just stupid, they'd do the right thing by accident sometimes. But when you have consistently bad consequences, and you know they're lying about everything, from the bird flu to the COVID, the PCR test, the whole lot, just two weeks lockdown to flatten the curve. If you wear a mask, it'll end COVID within 3 weeks. And if you get this vaccination, then you will definitely not get COVID. And how many things have they lied about on every level and destroyed how many millions of people's lives and businesses? How many countries' economies? I don't know how many countries export food now, but I believe it's down to something like 7 or 8 countries in the world export food of the 228 countries in the world. And we all used to be pretty food sufficient at one time. And South Africa used to be a food exporting country. How on earth is it that so many food exporting countries like Zimbabwe and South Africa now need to import food? This has been systematic breaking things down. If they kill the agriculture of the Netherlands, the second largest food exporting country in the world, they're really trying to work on America. Can you imagine the catastrophe? And Ukraine has fed a lot of countries. Ukraine's a great basket of Europe in many ways. You kill the wheat fields of Ukraine or don't allow them to export. The end result's catastrophic on every level. This isn't one crisis, this is a multiplicity crisis which have been orchestrated. Plainly you can see these are all avoidable. These are engineered, man-made, engineered, planned crises. Just like the Wuhan crisis virus was concocted in a laboratory in China, in the same way these food crises and shortages from energy, fertilizer, food, it's all plainly human engineered. Are people who've got a great reset in mind. So praise God for the farmers in the Netherlands who are standing up. And they've been standing up now for over a month and really making a big, strong stand. And farmers all over Europe are standing in solidarity with them. So there's tremendous resistance coming. I think the New World Order has never been so challenged as at this time from the truckers in Canada through the farmers in the Netherlands. Resistance is growing. That's a good question.
Please, I mean, going back to the Black Rock and the Vanguard, a couple of these massive, massive investment houses. I mean, Black Rock has got about $9 trillion under investment. So you imagine the power that they can exert on pension funds and other things to do, implement policies that align with the sort of New World Order agenda. I mean, this is what you're up against.
Yeah. You sort of wonder about the significance of the Black Rock as well, because we've got almost 2 billion Muslims around the world who bow down to a Black Rock in the box in the Kaaba. They believe there's a piece of the moon that fell down to the sky. It's a meteorite. So are they talking about that Black Rock? I mean, why a Black Rock? The only real famous Black Rock I know about is the one in the Kaaba in Mecca.
Yeah, I see a lot of holes in their stories are poking through for everybody to see. Mm. And I was discussing with somebody today even about September 11th. So come on, 2 planes took out 3 buildings. Think about it. You know, and then eventually said, yeah, it was done deliberately. What are you going to do? You know? That's what the average person gets to that point. They're intelligent enough, they know. But that we are not, that's above my pay grade, that's above your pay grade. What are you doing talking about these things? And that's the average attitude of the average person, and that's our biggest issue.
Mm.
You know, these people are doing what they're doing, and we can't wake these people up. So I don't know which way we actually took. It's going to be interesting to see.
Yes.
I don't see an awakening. Everybody says there's an awakening. I don't see an action. I don't see
well,
any action.
But there is a lot of action in the Netherlands. There was a lot of action with the truckers in Canada. Even in Australia and New Zealand, there was resistance from many people, which is not a majority in any case, but a very strong minority.
That's
which
true.
Helpful.
But then these people they're not showing a shred of backing down. There's no like. In fact, they bring drag queen story out just to really agitate and get those emotions. It's like they're totally fearless, clearly. And what
they might also be desperate because
they might be
like you look at this overreaction with going after Donald Trump, which it can't end well for them. This is very foolish. I mean, what are they gonna? They can't stop Donald Trump short of assassinating him. he's not going to back down. He's going to run in 2024 and he's going to win. If there's any kind of freedom, unless they murder him, which will create another backlash. Because right now, what they're doing is so unprecedented. You can see there's a panicking on their side. And it is making some people wake up. Not that many are willing to say so, but you can see there's far less believing of all the narrative being given to us now. You could blatantly see the FBI's lying, the White House is lying, the mainstream media's lying.
Yeah,
I don't know who takes our government seriously anymore either.
I think the FBI's image has completely changed in the public mind from what I see in the public opinion of the FBI. I mean, they now are investigating Las Vegas, all the bodies popping up. The FBI now, and so I saw the comments, are they there to cover up the crime or to, you know, investigate the crime?
Well,
which is probably what they're there for, to cover up.
If the crime's committed by their side, New World Order, they're there to cover it up. If the crime was committed, or maybe it wasn't even committed, but sometimes they've initiated crimes to try and pin on the opposition. So they're very partisan. They seem to have become sort of like the Stasi and the KGB, where they're running around to do the bidding of the political party in charge.
You know, I'm interested in the Daily Mail, probably, or article through, so I thought I'd go to the Daily Mail itself to see the original article or some excerpt. And anyhow, it was about Trump and the raid on Mar-a-Lago.
Mm.
And so, on the Daily Mail comment section, you get best rated, you know, worst rated, new, and oldest comments. So I go to the best rated, and you get a quick feel of what the sentiment is.
Yeah.
And apparently this is the largest newspaper in the world, but anyhow, newspaper group.
Hmm.
The likes for the top rated comment was something like 2,400. The dislikes was 227, but the likes were all in favor of Trump. Now, the Great Awakening is definitely happening, but the thing is that, like, some people are saying, you know, will protests be enough? Will, you know, objections be enough? Or are they so entrenched now that it will ram through anything regardless?
Yeah.
So we'll see in the next few years.
We will see, but just take some of the positive things. Amongst others, 2 million Americans, 2 million American children left the public school system over the last 2 years and are now being homeschooled. That's phenomenal. That's the biggest growth rate ever. So that's a vote of no confidence in the public schools. That's good. The fact that the Supreme Court could have actually overturned the Roe v. Wade legalized abortion mandate from the federal government, that's something that many people weren't sure would happen in our lifetimes. There are victories.
Well, in the United States, they've got a chance because they've got the 50 states, you know, just over half of them in red, and they will not necessarily comply.
Yes.
And if, for example, now with schooling in Florida, they had elections, primary elections there, and they had an absolute tsunami with the school boards. They overturned one after another of these liberal school boards because they don't want the critical race theory. Mm-hmm. They don't want trans identities and all that sort of stuff. And these guys have run an absolute landslide on that. So there's no doubt in the States there's got a chance. When I look at Britain, I'm not too sure. I mean, I see every day there are video clips of boatloads of people coming in.
It's an invasion.
It's a complete invasion. And they don't have, you know, whether you're Labour or you're Conservative, doesn't make any difference. They're both the same people there. They don't have, like, you've got in America, you've got the America First MAGA movement taking over that country because Trump's endorsements, I think he's at about 98.7% of his endorsements are winning the primaries in the GOP. Now, if the GOP also win, whether it will happen this election or the one in 2024, they will take the GOP and they'll probably take the country. So there's a chance. But when I look at Britain, there's no chance because the Conservatives there are absolutely useless.
Yeah.
The Labour's useless. Now, you know, you get a few of these patriotic parties or patriots, you know, but they're very small. So I don't know what
it's like. It's true, but on the positive side of Britain, they did win Brexit. And they've now got a new TV news called GB,
yeah,
which is a refreshing change from the nauseating BBC and the other liberal garbage. I don't know if you pay attention, considering you worked in Britain for quite a while. GB seems to be a refreshing change, and that I think has only come out in the last year.
GB?
That's it's a new news station. They're very progressive. Yeah. They're very they could be the other side.
Yeah.
They're pro-Trump, they're anti-establishment, anti-EU, and all that. But that's the first time I've seen a real decent alternative mainstream media popping up in Britain. So the fact that you could get a majority of the people vote for Brexit when the entire media was against it,
gives one a bit of hope. They still, you know, going onto their websites in the UK, they still think of it, you know, Boris Miller to the Brexit, proper Brexit, and all the rest of them. I said, no, you've got to go to Labour. You know, they go from one to the other,
Yes.
Whereas they don't realise that neither of them are going to serve the interests of the British people. And they, you know, in the States, you can see within a fairly near future something quite dramatic happening in this country. It's quite possible. In Britain,
yes.
So much needs to be done that it seems to be further down the line.
It's far further down the line, it's true. And they're disarmed, which is obviously a problem. But yes, I think from the positive side of our side, as we can see worldwide, there's a growth in homeschooling, there's a growth in alternative media, the mainstream media and the mainstream denominations are being forsaken in droves. People are going to the alternatives. And social media has made that more possible. So there is resistance. It's a minority, it's a remnant, but I think just as when Elijah said, I'm left. And the Lord said, there's 7,000 haven't yet bowed the knee to Baal. God has kept his remnant. So the fact is, yes, it's a remnant, and it's a privilege to be part of that remnant, and our call is to be faithful. Now, we would like to be successful as well, but that's in God's hands. The most important thing for us is to be faithful. And to be part of the resistance, which is what Protestants have always been called to do.
So the question about the story with Elijah, when he was proving that God has power, basically. Like, there's all the, and this makes me question these people now, who they're occultic and they, but it has no power. To me, it's very possible that it has zero power. What has power is their organization. Their Freemasonry, their synagogue of Satan, and that, the physical human realm.
Mm.
Because Elijah called down fire, and those people couldn't even get a little spark. I mean, they could do nothing. They spent all their witchcraft and all their power, it did zilch, zero. And is that not telling us that realm, it's nonsense? And God has power, but that is a deception.
This is what we need to put all our hope and faith in. We do what we can, we trust God to do what we cannot. And there's so much that's out of our power. We must do everything we can to get back to the Bible and rebuild everything in our sphere on the Word of God. But we are trusting God to do what we cannot, which is send revival, deliver us from his enemies, judge the wicked, deliver our countries, give us hope. But God has intervened before, but why should he intervene for people that are lukewarm, backslidden, don't care, send their children off to the pagans to be indoctrinated by the Philistines, sacrificing their own kids to Baal through abortion? And I mean, I'm sure you all have noticed or heard of this bizarre Commonwealth Games opening, which is nothing but Baal worship. Open Baal worship, right down to the calf, that the Egyptians...
There were a lot of comments about that.
Absolutely. Blatantly pagan. And the people on their knees and bowing down in front of this big calf. They brought in something like an 80-ton brass bull into the games on wheels. And they're all bowing down to it. It's just...
You mentioned also the California. They actually get their water from the Hoover Dam, most of it. The Las Vegas is close, but it doesn't use up a lot. Minuscule. So it's interesting that they're running in the Hoover Dam down, and that's what California's agriculture is very dependent on the Hoover Dam. So it's adding more evidence to the fact that this is a global effort.
Yes.
And then also those fires in Portugal. One of the guys being interviewed, I've been saying for ages, it's probably awesome. He said, no, we're putting these fires out, but then somebody comes up and starts them.
Yeah.
And well, this was on like CNN.
We had a spate them here in Australia, had, and I mean, there's California, and these have been shown to be awesome. So again, it's the favorite weapon of these leftists. They love arson. They can't build anything. Isn't it funny? People who speak about build back better. They've never built anything. And they certainly don't know how to do it better, that's for sure. They know how to break things down and burn things down, but they can't build back better.
Peter, what do you think about Italy and its crucial country that seems to be thrown off these bloodless shackles?
Yes, there are a number of good groups around Europe which are resistance groups. And you've got in Poland and Hungary and Czech and Slovakia and Netherlands, there are groups that are rising up. And you know, there's no majority party in many parts of Europe, like Netherlands, it's always a minority party. And there's the chance that the other parties that are anti-EU and that want to break out will come to power. Like in France, National Front, Marine Le Pen. She's very strong anti-EU. You know, if this whole thing falls to pieces, this sanctions and war on Russia, this proxy war through Ukraine, the EU could bust up, which would be a good thing, because the EU's just become one big globalist Tower of Babel. And they openly say that, because in the EU, they've literally built their Strasbourg parliamentary building in the shape of Babel. Even with an incomplete building and the scaffolding as part of the design. And they've got monuments outside, both in Brussels and in Strasbourg, of a woman riding the beast. And their slogan is, Europe, many tongues, one voice. And they're just openly mocking and rebelling against God. Everything they do, like the Commonwealth Games, just openly going in for Baal worship. It's like we're rejecting Christianity, we're embracing anything against Christianity. And of course, they're killing their own babies. The future doesn't belong to them, but Christians who get married, have many children, who homeschool, they belong in the future. Ultimately, the pro-aborts are not going to rule the future. I mean, they actually abort in the future. And they're getting panicky, they're overreacting. I think they've really overstretched themselves with this lockdown lunacy and salvation by vaccination, COVID cult. And now, this war against Russia, it's falling apart. It's not... The fact that India, Brazil, in fact, just about the whole of North Atlantic has just, they're ignoring the sanctions. They're doing business with Russia. Russia's now building an credible alternative to the US dollar based for international currency. And this is the one time when I'm finding myself in some agreement with President Governor Saakka that we're in formal alliance with Russia instead of with the US. Because on this case, I think they're right. The dollar-based system that they are pushing, New World Order globalism, much of it's good for the nationalist way that Brazil and India and Russia are advocating. And this really, Biden has overplayed his hand. If Donald Trump can make a comeback and get the White House in 2024, this time he went, trust his FBI and CIA and all the rest of stabbed him in the back. This time he might clean the swamp, drain the swamp. And I'm sure they're terrified of that prospect, which is why they're overreacting now to try and prevent that. But I think they wake up too many people.
Also, the scenarios, like if you play them right out, say they do get a hot war going like they want, who in the West of them? Usual people that go and fight are going to go and fight for the gay disco.
Yes.
You know, that's the biggest problem they have, really.
No, right.
Because they're not going to get anybody but blue-haired lesbians to go and push buttons and launch missiles.
Yeah. And wars are won by men on the ground. You know, you're not going to win wars just by technology, and you're not going to win wars remotely. They've tried that. I remember them declaring in the 1990s, I don't know if you remember that, a stupid war of 1999 against Syria, against Serbia. The wag the dog war to distract from Bill Clinton's scandals. And they declared at the time, it's the first war in history won totally by air power without any troops on the ground. Then later on it turned out that all the tanks that had been blowing up were actually fake tanks that had been set up to distract them, and that the Serbs had played the fool with the US and NATO forces, who were hitting all the dummy tanks and their dummy bases, and the Serbs really were not toppled, the government didn't topple, and it was a war that they said they'd won without putting boots on the ground, but in the end they haven't. You can't win wars just by remote air power. You need boots on the ground for winning a war. And that was proven, even though they declared the opposite. So, yep, they've chased out of the US military anyone who doesn't like unisex training barracks, who didn't like the trans agenda, didn't like the gay GB, who did not use the right pronouns, and who didn't want to take the vaccination. So I think they've chased most of the best people out of the military. And if they want to fight a war with China and Russia right now, I don't think it's going to go well for them.
No.
You know, the Russian army is all about how to kill the enemy. The American army right now is all about the right gender, pronouns, and
privileges. If they manage to stagger all the supply, I mean, currently people are so overfed, it will be a huge, huge mission for them to achieve. There are probably some people that have enough in the UK and body fat to keep them going for 10 minutes. There's a lot of calories, like, over.
Yes, nevertheless, it makes sense to dig for victory. Apparently, during the Second World War, they had all these posts around dig for victory. You mentioned having your victory garden, and they encourage everyone to grow vegetables and fruits in the gardens. And it's the most intelligent thing that everybody who's got a bit of cultivatable space should grow something. And, we need to be independent. And that's why they've had a war against farmers all over the world. It's not just South African Rhodesia. They've been having a war against farmers because farmers are self-sufficient. They want everybody to belong to a classless world society where it depends on the state. And so the more independent we can be, the better. And of course we can have relationships with our neighbors so that, you know, they've got this fruit tree, we've got these vegetables. I mean, one can have bartering, this person's got a borehole. We've got to be more self-sufficient, because the governments are going to orchestrate that, have all sorts of excuses and justifications why there's a food supply or there's a delivery supply, or why you can't have this on the shelf. But at the end of the day, we've just got to plan for the future. Stockpiling is one thing, but having fruit and vegetable gardens is an intelligent measure. Who knows, it'll probably be a crime just now to have vegetables growing in the back garden. So it's going to probably disguise them, you know, say growing drugs and stuff.
I think you're already not allowed to keep chickens in the suburbs, if I'm not mistaken.
Probably.
You're probably thinking of Australia.
Yeah, all the funny things going on. Australia, you definitely won't be allowed to.
But you know, Sri Lanka followed all these globalist policies and it took them to complete disaster. That's why they had that coup.
The people rose up and kicked out the WEF government.
So I think it's one thing for sure, if these things that we are thinking are happening, and there seems to be a hang of a lot of evidence that there are, we have a lot of stormy things coming.
Yes. Yes?
Yeah.
Look, these are dangerous times, but remember, every crisis has both danger and opportunity. And where there's danger, there's opportunity as well. There's opportunity for ministry, there's opportunity to trust God, there's opportunity to resist. And a lot of plans of the wicked have failed. They are behind schedule, and Donald Trump, for example, and Brexit upset the apple cart, and when Cape independence comes, it'll also upset the apple cart. Still working for the Cape of Good Hope. Free and independent Cape of Good Hope. This is hope for the future. Any other comments, observations? We should be praying for Razan Vasaki, who's in 12th year battling cancer, her third bout with cancer right now. She went through two seizures on Sunday and was rushed to hospital by ambulance, but she's back home, recovered from this initially. That was a real scare. We were asked to mobilize people to pray, which we did, because it looked very bad on Sunday and Monday. But let's keep praying for the Vasaki family. I think the Dutch farmers need a lot of prayer and support and solidarity. All those who are resisting all over, that needs serious resistance. We've got a home education seminar coming up in almost 2 weeks, Wednesday the 7th of September. 7th of September here, we'll be having a home education seminar in the morning of Wednesday the 7th, dealing with South African history, for anyone interested in home education and alternatives guaranteed to be politically incorrect.